Welcome to Engaging the Muse. I'm your host, Kat Spina. This podcast is all about giving voice to the creative process, meeting my guests where they are, and illuminating how they got there. Today, I welcome to the program Engaging the Muse, Erica Mather, yoga instructor, author of Your Body, Your Best Friend, and the confidence-crushing pursuit of unrealistic beauty standards, and embrace your true power, your body, your best friend. That's just such a key phrase. Thank you so much for being a part of this.
It's so my pleasure. Thanks for hosting me, Kat. Happy to be here.
Great. I want to open with a quote from your book because it really caught my attention. There's never been a better time to learn to love our bodies. We're in. Writers and artists, healers and activists, many of them women, many of them people of color, are rejecting body shame and embracing body positivity. It had me thinking about that. Where I would like to start tonight is, in your own words, continuing that conversation, contributing to this conversation of messages we've been hearing for such a long time about how to love ourselves more, how to take better care of ourselves, especially, I know this book came out in 2020, just on the edge of the pandemic, when we were really in it. So what is it about the relationship mindset that you're creating that you really want to flip the script on how people are perceiving themselves and perceiving their bodies right now?
Well, to that quote about creative people, what's interesting is that creativity is invisible. And creativity, you know, may map onto cultures, may map onto family structures, like certain kinds of musical, dance, art traditions come through certain cultures. But what does it have to do with your body? It may have everything to do with your body, like if you're a dancer. But let's take, for example, me. I used to be a professional jazz musician. And I was not accepted as a professional jazz musician because of my body. Not because of like the size or the height, but I was immediately typecast as not talented or not having the right sound because I'm white and because I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to name it. You know, it sounds really vain to say that I'm pretty, but I think that knowing that certain experiences occur because you are pretty and certain experiences don't occur because you are pretty, I think is very important. And pretty women tend to be written off. You didn't get where you got because you're talented. You got there because you're pretty. So I think that it's important creatives are bringing through their bodies some expression of life and don't necessarily want to be typecast for what you look like. So for instance, let's talk about Lizzo, right? Lizzo is a singer and a flute player. I think those things are primary, and maybe people decided what she could or she couldn't do because of her body. And she kind of said, screw y'all, I'm going to sing and play the flute and dance, and you can think what you want to think.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting because this is part of the, you know, the last piece of the book, Embrace Your True Power. Mm-hmm. Sometimes your true power is exactly because you've created an alliance with your body. Sometimes your true power is because you told everybody else to shove it, right? Because someone thought you were this or that because of what you looked like. And so I think the reason that quote is there and is interesting in a way is because I think it's a lot easier for creatives to say, it doesn't matter what I look like. Listen to me play my instrument. Watch me dance.
I believe it's gotten a lot easier. I really hear everything that you're saying, and I appreciate it from that lens of creativity so strongly because, you know, the early messages I received and what I needed to model were the 1990s pop stars, Mariah Carey to Celine Dion, and this polished look. And, You know, if you were on the other side of the spectrum of that, you were an Avril Lavigne skater, outcast, and just these stereotypes that were established early on when I was extremely impressionable as an 8-year-old, 10-year-old who was passionate about singing. And I got very confused by that messaging. And I didn't know how to relate to my music for a long time if I didn't fit into one of those categories. And it's very, very challenging. And even kind of going back to how your body was, I guess, not your best friend, or you just weren't connected physically to an optimal health when, with the migraines and the any of the physical damages that you got from playing piano, not only physically, but mentally. You know, it just had me thinking early on about being a young girl and having allergies or having a bad hair day and how that would really impact me professionally as I was trying to get out and perform. So what I feel is about your book, it's a known idea of to connect to the body, the yogi aspect I really do want to get into. But the lens that you're coming through, to me, it's almost like a college thesis. It's like you're really diving into the societal issues that nobody really wants to talk about very, very clearly and very strongly. It's something that we skate around. What do you think this book has done over the past few years and the reactions that you've been getting to help enhance the connection? What do you think is that main theme there that's helping people break through these barriers? Because I think it's going to be a really long struggle, but this book is unique from that lens.
Well, I'm trying to do something with my book that seems like a failing project from the outset, which is to help you connect to your body with the book. So like you said, it's kind of like a college thesis, and you and I share this in common. We have a lot of education. I have a master's degree. I was enrolled in a PhD program at Columbia in ethnomusicology, actually. So I really wanted to appeal to people's intellect, because the idea that you are going to value your body for just what it is a really nice idea until you run up against the barriers that society puts up. So I wanted to create an artful argument to take those down so that the reader could feel like they could move past those yeah buts, you know, and to see that what you're going to say, the yeah but, is a reality that's built mostly on lies and mostly on paradigms that harm one another. So if your intellect is engaged in a certain way, I think it might be easier to do the work of this mind-body thing. But here's really the key, is that there is one thing that you need to know to put the mind and the body together, and that is to breathe. So the problem with the whole mind-body paradigm is it poses these things as dichotomies. Well, first of all, it's not a dichotomy. Your mind is in your body. Where else could it possibly be?
Yes.
So your mind is part of your body. So the question is like, what is the lie that created the separation? It's not really a lie. It's more a perspective, like that we have the skill to look at ourselves, right? Is part of what creates the disconnect. But when you create this dichotomy, there has to be something to bring them together. So what is the energy that puts mind and body together? And the energy that puts mind and body back together is the breath. And I think that if you are a musician, or are, in particular, if you're a windy musician of any sort, that just all that deep breathing you got to do to play your instrument, it sort of starts to do it for you. It's like sneaky mind-body connection. Right? Because breath is the energy that pulls these parts of you back together. If you're a dancer, I mean, you're already kind of like doing this thing. I think even painters, I mean, it's like, it's so interesting to me. You can't do anything without using your body. You really can't. So this connection is there. What will the book do? I mean, my hope for the book was and is that it would introduce yogic techniques to people outside the yoga world. And that it would introduce them to ways to become embodied that are actual, that it's not just more journaling, or it's not just more knowledge, because having more knowledge doesn't necessarily make you more embodied. So my hope was that the book, some of the yogic techniques in the book, would introduce people or even reintroduce yoga people to this connection with fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm. It's having me think of two things. I really love that. And I'm relating to all of this. I'm thinking about how the journaling of recent, I've been resisting it. And I've had a conversation with somebody and they use the phrase, writing it down makes it real. It makes it tangible. And the things that I'm working on to get them out and to process them, to get them onto paper, makes me physically feel better. It gets all the residue out. It gets me out of my head and it gets me stronger connected to myself. Whether some technique of burning the pages later or deleting that draft email, but it's out there. And that's where this journaling perspective and some of these prompts that I came across, it's not only the writing. The one that also got me that here's evoking that physical response, it made me nervous. Things like sit in front of the mirror, set a timer for 3 minutes, look yourself in the eye for those 3 minutes. Don't look away. Continue to gaze, find out what you see. Try to look in the left eye, try to look in the right eye. Do this every day. Document. And that created anxiety because not only the writing would evoke emotions, but really being able to look yourself in the mirror. And again, going back to this idea of, you know, what it was like to be an aspiring musician and an accomplished musician at that. You mentioned a lot in the book about social media. Where's the messaging throwing us off? Where do you think the main source of this manipulation or the confusing messages that interfere with us is coming from?
Well, I mean, society is made up of people. Right? Mm-hmm. Society is an abstraction. So let me make sure I understand the question. Where is the messaging coming from that is telling us that we need to conform or that we to look a particular way in order to be even to be creative, to be valuable as a creative.
And that mirror experience and how that kind of relates to the process of understanding our world, because we could get really intimate with our own selves and really have that one-on-one connection. And then here we are going back out into the world. For me, I find the consistency challenging when you do just get confronted with the environmental factors and the society around you. There's the moment of the silence during the pandemic I really loved, and I felt the most connected to myself because everything was silent and everything was a lot more quiet. And when we get loud again and we get all of these things going, I wonder what it would be to stay consistent and how does that look when the messaging is on the other side, still designed to throw us off, still designed to test us, and how we can stay in our power.
I have a very simple, annoying answer, which is to have a practice of connecting to yourself.
Simplicity is bliss. I love that. What does your practice look like on a daily basis? What's that like for you?
I think of yoga like a relationship. So I've been practicing yoga for 20 years. I started practicing when I began having migraine headaches, and it's been 20 years. And what it looks like is very different from day to day. At the beginning, I practiced once a week. I was a once a week practitioner. And then I moved to New York City and I probably went twice a week because I was in graduate school and it was very stressful and yoga was like the only place I felt calm. And then I went to my teacher training and did yoga every day for a month. And then I came back and started practicing every day. And now you will hear people say that their practice changes as they get older. Practice through the pandemic was I practiced a lot and now I practice a lot less because I've lost sort of some of the structures.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say practice, what I mean specifically is asana. Asana meaning the physical postures. But we Westerners have a very narrow view of what yoga means. And part of what I write about in the book is some of the philosophy and some of the other ways of being involved in yoga, even if you're not doing a triangle pose or you're not doing a down dog. But what I'm looking for is a feeling of connection to myself. And sometimes I can only achieve that connection through doing the actual physical practice. And sometimes I can feel that connection through doing something else, through going for a walk, through making a phone call to a friend, through cooking something. So the question is like, once you learn how to make the connection, do you actually need the tool that originally taught you to make the connection to make the connection? And when I say I'm looking for a feeling, it's just, it's a, the feeling of being connected to myself is one of not always calm, but definitely, I think, compassion, like what we would describe as compassion. And the thing it is, compassion is kind of the antithesis of the beauty ideal. Everything about the beauty ideal asks you to reject yourself, and viciously so. I mean, isn't it startling when you discover that someone who is very close to the beauty ideal still rejects themselves, right? So I think that nobody really escapes this unless they've just really kind of like decided to like let it go. And I think that people decide to let it go sometimes when they're older. They're just like, I'm not young anymore. I'm never going to be young again. Let it go. Sometimes I think people let it go when it's obvious to them that they are so far away from the beauty ideal that it will never be achieved. For instance, let's take Lizzo again. Like, we know that the beauty ideal is white and thin, and you know, that is the beauty ideal. So sometimes people let it go when they realize like, not happening, you know? So let's not beat ourselves up over this. And those are gestures of self-compassion. So that really, I think, is what it is, what my yoga practice looks like, is how can more and more moments be filled with compassion for the world and for myself, for the people around me. It's not easy.
Right. But awareness is everything. And I think that is creating the step forward that we do need, and the perception to be more kind does come from the way that we do treat ourselves. And it's like I say in my class, the communications class, communication starts with self. What are the messages that you're telling yourself on a daily basis? How is that shaping your day to day? And taking a moment to pause and remember those messages and what's not serving you, that's absolute information that needs to be assessed, I think, for us to evolve. Do you think this could be done, this idea of this connection, without yoga?
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But what it really just requires is some sort of discipline in which you make the objective to connect to yourself. It could be walking. You could go for a walk and that's how you connect to yourself. It could be that you draw. It could be the journaling thing, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be yoga, but I find for me, because yoga is so much about the body, that it does help me make peace with the body specifically, right? We use the word self kind of like loosely, and you know, self is an aspect of the body, but the body is an aspect of the self.
Right. It almost has me thinking that a phrase of which might be more powerful or empowering is, instead of this self-care, 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 but today I am going to connect. Today I'm going to connect with myself. And maybe something that simple goes to the essence of my body, my best friend. I start here.
I love that. I think that's a really great reframe, because I think a lot of people, when they think self-care, they just don't even know what to do. And how could you possibly know how to take care of yourself if you haven't done the first step, which is to connect?
Connect. Today I am here to make a connection with myself. And that's the starting off point. I know you had a couple of mantras that were influential to you. And I'm working right now with a book called Creative Visualization. And some of the affirmations work and some, again, I'm just not connecting to. And maybe there's still an arm's length there and I'm still not getting those words to resonate in my body. But if I just start with that mirror exercise or something along those lines, I feel like not only myself, but everybody listening to this podcast could find ways to stop during their day and find ways to connect. And that in and of itself is how we engage the muse. How do we keep our creativity going and our passions within ourselves going? So thank you for that. What a beautiful contribution to this idea and ideal of self. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I am inspired by inspired people. Erica, you are one of those people. I appreciate your words. And if you would like to learn more, it's Your Body, Your Best Friend, and The Confidence-Crushing Pursuit of Unrealistic Beauty Standards, and Embrace Your True Power. So go out there and do it. Erica Mather, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Thanks for having me on your wonderful podcast. Muses everywhere.
Yes, engaging the muse, process, creativity, and the journey.
If you want to learn more about the process, creativity, and the journey, check out my website, catspinamusic.com. Thank you again for listening.